T-Tote, David Jenkins standing by, and Terry, always one of our favorite shows of the year. The Crotervilles are here.
The Crotervilles are here, that's right. It's almost like a sitcom on ABC, you know, the Crotervilles are here. So, and I've said for years, one of the great parts about our job in radio are the people that you meet, and you two guys are a perfect example, Roger Crotterville and sons Tim, and guys, good morning. It's a, honestly a pleasure just to have you here. It really is. So
good morning.
Yeah,
good
rain morning. Brought us here.
The rain brought you here, and Tim's headed back to football practice as soon as we get done, and we're going to talk a little bit about his double duty as serving as not only as principal at Pawnee High School, but as high school football coach. And right off the bat, though, Roger, what the heck is with these Cubs here? Are they for the real?
Well, I don't think the Cardinals actually invested any good money this year in improving their team. I kept waiting in the spring and early spring for them to make that one big move. They had some great players available from Miami that they could have picked up. But the John Mozeliak said, we'll stand pat. And that's what we got.
Well, it wasn't for lack of trying earlier in the offseason, what with getting shut out at the winter meetings with Hayward and Price. And
well, yeah, that was kind of an unusual situation.
That's called spending money. Yeah. They did not want to spend the large amount of money in order to invest in these
people.
Well,
and they do have some talent down on the farm. And you know, I guess it's you have to balance everything out. And they thought they could make a run. But, you know, the Cubs, we knew the Cubs were going to be good, but were they going to be this terrific? Oh, wow. They just pound the ball.
Well, it seems that everybody's a Cubs fan this year. I've seen more Cubs shirts on people that I haven't seen in a long time.
That is true.
And I don't know about you guys, but I can think of all the Cub fans that I've known over the years. And many of them have passed away now. And here's their one shot maybe this year to have the Cubs in the World Series and maybe even win the darn thing.
So. Well, when you get on Facebook, you see all these Cubs win, Cubs win. Mm-hmm. We got a guy from my own named Joe Karlovic who is a Dodger fan, but yet he puts on there every time the Cubs win, Cubs win. Well, that's to aggravate all the Cardinal fans.
Sure. And if you're a Cardinal fan and you look at this year, you got to remember how difficult it is, and you guys as coaches know that you can be good, but staying good is a whole nother ball of wax, and you know, if at the professional level, especially when they're dealing with you know, bullpens that are guys that can throw 110 miles an hour practically, and free agency and all that kind of stuff, it's a very difficult task.
Well, there's an old line in baseball, the difference a year makes, and we don't realize that when these guys get older, they get in their 30s, I mean, a difference of 1 year can really make a big difference. Take a look at Holiday. I mean, Holiday was a super ball player, and of course he's injured now, but he's become kind of a hazard out there in left field. It's the old line we used to use at White City Baseball. Your area that you're going to be able to cover is from shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
And that's about with him. He can't go much further than shoulder to shoulder.
He might have played his last game in a Cardinals uniform, what with a $17 million option next year.
That's a distinct possibility. By the way, did they get any retaliation in?
Now, Wainwright was too busy getting lit up to actually worry about retaliating.
I kind of figured that they probably didn't have that opportunity yesterday. So, well, let's talk with Tim Crotterville, who is the principal at Pawnee High School, and Tim is also taken on the task of being a head football coach. And first off, Tim, I want to kind of peer into your mind here a little bit. The thinking, the process behind making that decision, because you're a busy dude as principal, let's just face it.
At the junior high, too, so
and
that's double duty.
And it's a small school district, so you wear many, many hats, and now you put on the football head coaching job hat. That really makes for some time management issues, doesn't it?
Well, it'd be interesting. Everybody has kind of asked me, how's it going so far, and with no kids there and no parents yet, it's been perfect. We'll see once we start on Tuesday when everybody starts to show up for school. But, you know, it wasn't something that I really had thought a lot about. We kind of knew that Coach Thine was going to step down. The problem with Pawnee, and the same with a lot of small schools, is when you don't have a teaching position, you really cut the amount of candidates that you can have in half or more. And really, we had two viable candidates that fit our situation, and unfortunately didn't work out with either of those candidates. They both turned us down, and you know, I knew what Kit had done for our program. And not saying that I can replicate that, but I just didn't want us to put anybody in there for
a warm body.
Yeah, just to get through and you know, hope that maybe he decided to come back after a year off to recharge the batteries. So, you know, I had previous experience, and I thought, you know what, I can step in and again, not try to do as good a job as he did, but at the same time, you know, try to keep the program where it is. And luckily, you know, this just tells you the type of individual that, that Kit is and how much he loves Pawnee. And I know it was a very difficult decision for him, but, you know, most coaches would have left after this year because we have a lot of talent coming back in our junior and senior class, and that doesn't mean next year is going to be a failure. That's not what I mean by any means. But after the next 2 years, you know, our numbers for football go down quite a bit, and you know, a lot of coaches will want to get that one more good year and then kind of walk out when the talent dries up. And he did not want to leave the football program in that situation. He wanted to give the next guy a chance to be successful. And if we stay healthy, I think we could be successful.
And the fact that you're in the building, you're there every day, see the kids every day, you know, that has its advantages as well.
Yeah, most definitely. And I know that coaches that we've hired in the past outside the building, that's always been a concern that, you know, it's difficult to know, gauge the feeling of what's going on, stay on them academically. And I know our coaches do a good job still staying on that, but it is a lot easier, you know, for me to see a kid in the hallway and kind of find out what's going on and continue to, you know, build those relationships with them in order to, you know, try to get the best out of them.
So what were the discussions around the house when this came up?
Well, I did discuss.
If I might ask.
I did discuss it with my family first. You know, my sons, by the time that I stopped coaching baseball, they were just getting to the age when they were starting to enjoy me being a coach, where they could come and sit in the dugout and you know, hang out. And you know, the players, my players in Taylorville, were always really good about including my sons in what
like
was going
on.
Yeah. So, you know, they were disappointed that I had hung up the baseball when I did, but, you know, it was time for a change for me professionally at that time. They were on board. They really were. And you know, my son Jack is a freshman this year, and he, so far, because sometimes in practice he gets a little bit more of an earful than others. It's difficult because you try to treat everybody the same,
but
you can't, because you, being the coach, you have a little bit higher expectations of them being able to know what's going on. And sometimes that doesn't always happen. And he's got a great attitude about things. And, you know, my son Jack and Luke were both on board. My wife Wendy was on board. Olivia's only a second grader, so she'll do whatever she wants. And she actually comes out to practice and hangs out with us once in a while. And she's really liked it.
We've talked with Chad East today, the head coach at Carlinville, about that before, coaching his kids. And he made the point, everybody else, they get to go home. He has to ride home with me and then sit at the dinner table as well.
Well, and I think there are times that coaches have admitted to me over the years that when they're coaching their own kid, he can talk to the rest of the team through his child. And sometimes the messages can be delivered in different ways, and that's just a different way to deliver a message, Brad.
See, my situation was just the opposite of that. People would ask me after all the years I coach, why would you not want to coach your son coming up? You knew what he was going to be, and Matt Domsel and all the rest of them. But I always had a feeling. I mean, my feeling was that I've coached him since he was born, and it's time for me to get away from it and be a fan more than that. I hated doing that, but that was the best attitude I figured.
But
I figured
as you
I'd
look back at it, Roger, that was a great decision on your behalf.
Right.
It was a tough decision, one of the toughest you probably had to make professionally, right?
Right. Well, one of the coach who replaced me was one of my players. So consequently, he knew what I had taught him over the four years. And so then he ended up coaching there a long time himself.
Terry Marietta.
Yeah, Terry Marietta, correct.
Did a great job. And you know, a lot of baseball talent went through that Mono program over the years, including this guy sitting next to you here. So,
well, a lot of parents, though, you know, when you spend time with your kids, like I said, with him, I mean, he was the perfect attitude as far as coaching because he never liked to give up. I mean, you could work him with a, you know, hit pepper with him. And, you know, I was getting older myself at this time, and he wouldn't give up. I mean, how about 100 balls without missing one? Well, he'd get 100 balls without missing one. And then I thought, well, it's over with now, and then let's do it again. And that's the attitude you got to have to be an excellent athlete.
We have Roger Tim Crotteville in studio with us. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk more sports on Sports Saturday right after these messages.
Cardinal baseball today from Wrigley Field. We'll have it for you live at 12:25 on AM 1540 and FM 106.9. Maybe they'll keep it inside the slaughter rule today.
Well, we hope so. You know, the 15-run rule. Isn't that the third inning?
It was close yesterday.
And that's some of the summer leagues, you know, 15-run rule, third inning. By the way, we're slinging a little bull here this morning on Sports Saturday, and we will literally talk about bull riding coming up near the end of the program today, because we've had a chance, or Katie Wilson of our farm department had a chance to catch up with Randy Littrell, and they have the Battle of the Bulls event coming up in September at Midway Trailer Sales, and we'll have that towards the end of the program today. But we have Tim and Roger Crotteville in studio with us, and Tim, let's go to you and talk a little bit about the Prairie State Conference here, and certainly I would think, without putting a bullseye on your back, Pawnee certainly would be, if not favored, certainly one of the teams to beat in the conference this year.
Yeah, that you figure that probably will be the case. Everybody, you know, when you have a new coach, the perspective can be a little bit different.
Sure.
You know, obviously we go into the season with the expectations of winning every game, which you do, and making the playoffs. Exactly. And we talked about that last night a little bit about you know, what our expectations are and winning a conference championship and hopefully having a deep run in the playoffs. You know, for us with our depth with 28 players, we need everybody to stay healthy, but within the group that we have starting, we have a very good group of individuals coming back. But, you know, the Prairie State kind of takes some abuse because it's a small school conference and, you know, from year to year, you don't know if teams are going to have JV, if they're going to have enough players, but, you know, it is a pretty balanced conference top to bottom. And, you know, Alton Marquette, you never know what you're going to get with them. They had a lot of juniors last year, so I would think that they would be another one of the teams to beat. Kincaid, I know, has good numbers. You know, Mount Olive was much improved. Nokomis, you know, they always have some athletes in Nokomis. They've got a new coach as well. So, you know, the big thing is just keeping our kids focused and not overlooking anybody on a week-to-week basis.
And usually the biggest difference with the Prairie State is a lot of teams in close conferences can say, if we get the 5 wins, we'll get in on points. But a lot of times in the Prairie State, you've got to get that 6th win to ensure your spot to get in.
Yeah, most definitely. And our first 2 weeks are very important for us. We go to Shelbyville and play a team that we haven't beat the last 2 years. They also had a lot of juniors, and you know, then we play Oakwood at home the second week, and you know, our goal is to start 2-0, and that's been our focus since the summer started, of coming out ready to play against Shelbyville week one.
So what do you do as far as a head coach? What do you you know, try to set the expectations? Of course, I guess the kids have the advantage knowing that you were the principal, so this is not like it's completely new, but still they're seeing you in a different light here as head football coach.
And that's been interesting for me as well, because as a coach over the years, you know, that's a different hat that you put on than an administrator. And I still try to be myself, but at the same time, keep in mind that, you know, I am the principal and they have to see me in the hallways. I know early on it was a tough transition for some of them, you know, Mr. Crotteville versus Coach Crotteville. You know, either is fine, and I tried to take the pressure off from that way. But, you know, I think the important thing is for my coaching personality to come out, and, you know, I can be a principal Monday through Friday during the week. I think that's what the kids do expect. But again, I walked into a program where respect and hard work and dedication was already established. I did not have to come in and establish that. So, you know, the kids have been very, very responsive to what we've done. I did have a full new coaching staff that I brought in, and, you know, I think we've all really worked well together.
And Pawnee, even though we don't see Pawnee very often here on WSMI, I know the reputation has been, you know, very good athletics over the years, and that's something that's kind of a point of pride for the community.
It is, and it's an expectation. You know, a lot of the individuals that went through,
you know, the early 90s when football wasn't so good in Pawnee, or now in positions where their kids are starting to come through. I know I have one that's on the board of education, and, you know, his expectations, which they should be, is for us to keep the success. So, you know, all across the board, obviously we've had a great baseball program over the years. Our basketball team had a great season last year, and you say, well, a couple games under 500, how's that a great season? Well, we play every Sagamo school, and there is a big difference between playing Sagamo schools and some of the other schools on our schedule. You know, and obviously football had a great season. So, you know, the kids, the big thing is that the kids expect us to win in sports. And that's a big thing of not having to sell it as much, and them coming in with that expectation, that kind of chip on their shoulder right out of the gate.
And you were at Taylorville, and now you're at a smaller school, Pawnee. Difference? Perception-wise, as far as sports and expectations?
Taylorville really had some high expectations for sports. There's no doubt about it. But Taylorville was, you know, football first right out of the gate. But basketball, people forget the tradition in basketball in Taylorville. And there was a lot of people that, there was a lot of people in Taylorville that still said that basketball was number one and football was number two. Baseball was a distant third. I'd like to think that I started to get people to take baseball serious. We did have some success there, you know, after I was there a couple years. You know, Pawnee fits me better. I loved my years in Taylorville. I have no complaints from there, but, you know, when you're a small town guy, you like that atmosphere. And going to Pawnee was like going home for me, because, you know, the amount of participation from families of the community within the sports, within the school district, that was a big difference, is that people were very actively involved in the school district, number one, and obviously sports as well.
Well, you know, I was from a small school too as a principal, but I've always been impressed with Pawnee for not just sports, but they have a tremendous music program. I mean, they're band and their choir, and we go to all these activities, and of course our grandkids are involved in many of those things. And that's very, very impressive, you know. So I felt good when he got the Pawnee job, and thanks to the former superintendent there, who he became very close to. And
Don Burton from Hillsboro.
Donnie Burton.
Don Burton.
Good buddy of Don Burton.
Yep.
So much of football is preparation in the week, Tim, and I guess my question would be, stylistically, when fans come out on Friday night, are they going to see the same style of football they've come accustomed to, or will there be some tweaks and changes?
I don't know if I can answer that question. I want everybody to give away all the secrets.
You're taking notes now, yeah?
I will just say the majority of what we do is going to be the same as what was established before. Obviously, there's always some different preferences as far as maybe different plays that I fall in love with that maybe Kit only called a few times. I don't know until I get into it. To be honest with you,
it's probably good that you don't know.
It isn't, yeah. And that's something people have asked me, you know, what's the difference between you and Coach Stein? I said, I really don't know. You know, I walk into basketball practice a lot when I was in school because I'm in the school, but I can honestly say I've never seen probably more than about 5 minutes of football practice in the 6 years that I was at, you know, that I'm at Pawnee, because I just am not out there. So, I did not want kids to get in a situation where they had to compare. I wanted them to take us two separate coaches and try to establish again. I know that they loved him, and I'm glad that they did, because it reflected in the success, but I want them to take me as a separate coach and with my own style.
And as an administrator, that was a luxury, that you didn't have to worry about being out the football field, you know, because Kit took care of things. You knew that was going to get taken care of.
Yeah, and you know what? Our coaching staff as a whole, there really isn't any concerns. We've got an outstanding coaching staff, girls sports as well. And the reason I popped into basketball is because, I was in the building and I needed to get out of my office a little bit. Not that I was lazy, but it was a long walk out to the practice field to go watch football. But
those hills.
Well, that's exactly right. But coming back to your question, we're still going to be a double wing tight team. Yeah. And, you know, we've got Austin Galloway coming back as a 1,000-yard rusher.
Terrific athlete.
Yes, outstanding athlete. Yesterday we were doing special teams and I had the punters lined up, and he was receiving and he was punting as a receiver, and the kids that were punting were going,
I think he needs to punt. I mean, it was just no effort whatsoever, and he was booming them, and I brought him down there. He goes, you know, I really didn't want to punt. I said, well, you shouldn't have been punting it back then, because you're punting better than the guys that are down here punting right now. So
the selling job is on.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So, the problem is that he does a little bit of everything, so I'm going to have to find some time to get him off the field to be able to to give him a little bit of a break.
Yeah, that's the challenge of a small school. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, an interesting sideline on this story about the Prairie State Conferences. When it was organized, my principal, Mike McKean at Mount Holly, appointed me, you take care of it and do all that. So I met with Mert Mesmore from, you might remember him from Auburn.
Yes, I do.
The only reason I'm mentioning that is he's 90 years old, and they're having a big celebration for him up near Rock Island or something. I didn't know he was still alive. But the Pawnee principal and myself and Mert Mesmore, we organized the Prairie State Conference. And Mesmore, his biggest asset in this thing was he kept all these rival schools happy with his decisions. I mean, there's a lot of rivalries there, and when we got schools like Williamsville and Riverton and some of those in the schools, then a lot of problems occurred because they had their own agendas,
and
we had, others. Everybody had their own agenda, what they wanted, and Mesmore was super. In fact, I gave the speech when he retired for him.
And the Prairie State was so it was a huge conference when it was first created.
Oh, yeah.
Because it went all the way from Williamsville to... Was Mount Olive?
Yeah,
Mount
Olive.
We would be the farthest south,
yeah. And points in between, so it was a pretty big conference at that point.
Well, when I was chairman of it, I tried to keep it small. Mm-hmm. And, the Nokomises, the Kincaids, the Pawnees, the Mount Olives, and so on, Auburns at that time. And there were people pulling at me, and I can think of a couple of schools right now, who wanted the Rivertons and the Williamsvilles in there. Yeah. And that did no good for the conference because then it limited to one or two teams that won darn near everything.
Yeah. We need to get to another break. We're going to continue our conversation with Roger and Tim Crotteville right after these messages.
Football Friday, 2 weeks from yesterday. So that means 2 weeks from today, we'll be talking to high school football coaches about results.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will. We'll have week one in the books 2 weeks from today, which is hard to believe, but it's about darn time.
And it'll be playoff preview time before we know it.
Yes, it will.
Yeah.
The 9 weeks of high school football, of all the sports, seems to pass so quickly. And you can take 9 weeks of baseball, 9 weeks of but 9 weeks of football, it's gone.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know what. Is it perception because it's one game a week, I guess, maybe?
I think your practices change, don't they? You have like a light one on Monday. You only have like, one tough practice?
Really, two practices
two
during
practices
the course of a week that
a
are
week, yeah.
going to get after
but,
a little
but
bit.
Just the perception that the season goes so quickly.
It does. You're absolutely right.
It does. And, even schools where programs aren't very successful, the atmosphere and the attitude in a school in the fall during football season is different than any other time of the year.
Mm-hmm. True.
Same within a community. And even, they said, with our community that supports all the sports very well, the excitement around football season is like no other.
Tim, I want to touch on one thing here. And we're always talking about safety, and it starts with the coaches. Whether it's at the JFL level, at the high school level, teaching the fundamentals. And when you teach the fundamentals, the sport is safer.
I agree with that. And I walked in a situation where our kids had good fundamentals before. And, football gets a lot of criticism because of some of the national headlines. But, if you do teach the kids the right way to do it, it seems to be those freak things that happen where kids get hurt. And not saying that can't happen with concussions. I know I had a few concussions, but, you were taught a little bit differently. And we were just talking, off air as far as the practice schedules and how that changes. I've got some older time coaches, actually Jeff Kirkendall, who used to coach with, Coach Horn at Kincaid back in the early 90s when they were successful, when the Foley brothers were running everybody over down there. And what you do in practice changes so much. And, today's our first day of hitting. We are going to scrimmage today, but when you get in a course of a week-to-week, especially when you get in the season, you may hit one day if you even do that, and you might only do it for about a half an hour, and that's it. Before, maybe because it's memory, it always seems that we hit all the time when I was in high school, and probably the same when you know, my dad was in high school. It seemed like you always hit all the time, and it's just not that way anymore.
We didn't even wear a face mask, you know, I mean, really. But I think the rules have changed in football a little bit to help you, like the crackback blocking and even your offensive blocking where you can use your hand. We couldn't even use our hand. We had to lock them in inside. Mm-hmm. Now you can at least put a hand on it, correct, Tim? Mm-hmm. You can put hands on the person you're trying to hit. And to a certain degree, blocking is getting in the way of the guy to keep him from getting to the ball handler.
And football has taken probably the brunt of this notoriety about safety. But, you know, most any other recreational activity, you have freaky things happen from time to time. So it's not just football. It's, you know, it could be a lot of other things. And, you know, just look at the number of people that get involved and that you know, step off the sidewalk and break an ankle just mm-hmm. because they stepped wrong. So, you know, as long as you stick with the fundamentals, you're at least doing what you can do to make the sport as safe as possible.
You hope so. Yeah. You hope so. And yeah, when you deal with head injuries and people's minds, that is going to get to the amount of headlines. But one thing that, you know, people forget with different sports, look at girls athletes and the amount of ACL knee injuries. I mean, the number of that, we right now have two of our girls in volleyball that have blown out their knees and have had to had surgery. And we do things preventative during the summer to try to combat that. But for some reason, female athletes are more apt to get a knee injury like that.
Yeah. And in baseball, it's Tommy John surgery or anything now. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Did you see the Olympic cyclist that flew over her handlebars and landed on her head?
Yeah.
It's all dangerous.
Yeah.
It's all dangerous. Yeah, you know, anybody that wants to try to do anything, there's always a risk involved, you know, and that includes just driving a car to work.
Yeah. And if you want to go to the next level, you do set yourself up for getting hurt or something. Sure. I mean, it's a matter of the luck of the draw sometimes, what happens.
Roger, well, I've got you here, and I know an Eastern guy that you are, and how the funding and everything has affected Eastern Illinois University in particular, because it's so close to home and so close to you. The athletic program at Eastern has been a hugely successful program over the years. How is this going to be affected? Do you still have some ties here, and what's the situation there?
Well, I have some ties here, but I'm not on the board anymore. I retired on the board in February of this past year. I had 12 years on it. I'd been chairman and all the other positions you can get. But every school's in the same boat. I mean, if you take a look at Western and Southern and all the rest of them, and, you know, I just saw a ranking yesterday on the Internet, the top 30 schools in Illinois, and Eastern was ranked number 3 behind University of Illinois and University of Illinois Chicago.
And I don't know what source he got on that.
I don't recall Southern being mentioned. But anyway,
what site he was looking at to find that ranking.
But that was
ranking. That's what I want to know.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was the Eastern website. But anyway, I think what's happening with this is because of the unstableness of the universities financially, you're going to find athletes moving on. Mm-hmm. They move on to other schools. They look for other directions. It's just not opportunity. It's just that whether they're going to be able to stay there financially. And Eastern has more sports than most schools in Illinois. Actually, Tom Michael, who's our athletic director, remember a star from
Tom
Illinois?
Michael, yeah, sure.
He told me at a reception not too long ago that we have as many sports as the University of Illinois. And there's no reason for that. That we would have that many sports because you drain resources from everybody. But still, the school's holding together. People are coming there, but unfortunately enrollment is down in almost every school in Illinois except maybe one, maybe SIU Edwardsville may be the one that has, well, U of I has their standard. Yeah. But I understand they had a dip to some degree into their reserve students to fill that initial group, you know. Yeah. But so the point is that they're all suffering, but it's a public schools. I mean, the public schools. How many schools are losing sports? You know, Mount Olive just went through a cutting where they decided not to fund 3 sports, and they were some of the most successful sports we had there. And like I said, that's going on all over the state.
The proverbial rock and a hard place.
Right.
We need to get to another break. We'll continue with Sports Saturday in a moment.
Back to Sports Saturday.
Okay, thank you very much, Tim. And, of course, coming up, Cardinal baseball here on over on AM 1540 and the new FM 106.9 as the Cardinals try to find a way to compete with the Chicago Cubs this afternoon as it's been ugly.
One of their top prospects starting today.
Weaver. And, yeah.
Well, he doesn't walk many people.
No, he doesn't. Done a lot of hits either.
Yeah.
Don't throw it down the middle.
Well, I think the Cubs are in the mode right now where it doesn't make any difference where you throw it. They're going to be able to get to it and put the ball in play.
Well, he's got the perfect manager for that team. They do. He keeps them loose, mm-hmm. and they spent a lot of money mm-hmm. bringing in people. So they got the perfect combination. Now, whether that'll work out, we'll see.
He absorbs a lot of the attention that would otherwise be on the players.
Yeah. Right, absolutely. Yeah. So,
Tim, how old are your kids now? I might ask.
Now my son Jack is 14. He's a freshman this year. And Luke's a seventh grader. He's 12. And my daughter's 7. She's in second grade. And, that's another great thing about Pony. We're one building.
Yeah.
So I get to see him every day. And so Jack far, it's still a good thing for them. They still like to see me every day. So.
And Grandpa's close enough he can visit.
Yes, he can.
Probably too much.
I don't think that's possible.
We drive a lot of miles to see those kids play all over the creation, and we wouldn't have it any other way.
But, see, that's part of Americana. You know, that's... If you go to a larger setting, they don't get that. They don't get mom and dad and grandma and grandpa. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a hugely important part to our smaller communities.
Yeah, it is, most definitely. And I, good memories as a kid riding my bike over to grandma and grandpa's house. And that has changed quite a bit. Everybody's spread out numerous places.
Well, and just memories of doing football at Mount Olive. Mm-hmm. You know, when you got the guys cooking in the grills right next to the football field. that's just unbelievable.
Well, we had a lot of great eras at Mount Olive, but that era when 88 to 92, when Tim was in high school, that and many others, because they had a lot of great athletes.
Well, and I remember the baseball sectional. That was probably the premier sectional of all sectionals that we ever did with when you played
Southwestern.
Southwestern, you had Sean Watson, Isringhausen, Booz, and you had Weaver, who I think was Tri-City that they were co-oping with at the time.
Yeah.
He was pitching for them. And then, of course,
Matt Thompson.
Matt Thompson and Greytalk. Greytalk was a lefty, wasn't he?
Yep.
Very
underrated.
Oh,
yeah.
Actually had as good an ERA as Thompson,
he did.
He?
Right. And a lot of people don't know Steve, he went to Eastern, and he tried out at Eastern, and he was down to the end and hurt his arm. Yeah. And he would have made the team. I mean, he had a great curveball, live fastball, and that ran in his family, too. His dad was an outstanding pitcher for my dad and pitched at Edwardsville, right? You get a small school, you've got a righty and a lefty that are pretty darn good. That's unusual, a school our size.
And Steve, left-hander, they don't throw anything straight. Moves. You can't even play catch with a left-hander.
Well, I tell you what, he corkscrewed more people into the ground than I can ever imagine.
Yep.
I mean, that guy, you're digging in, and all of a sudden it comes up there, and you take that big old swing, and
he's a great golfer, too. Yeah, I see him play golf. Oh, his driver is like a 2 or 3 wood or something like that. He don't even use a driver, does he? Yeah. Well, he plays against him, so he knows all about that.
Tim Crotteville, I know you got to get back to practice, and Roger, it's always good to see you. Guys, thanks for coming. We appreciate it. We really do. And good luck this season. We'll see you. Hopefully we'll see you down the line here. And Roger, you're always welcome to come back. You guys, you're always welcome to come back. You know that.
Well, as always, Terry, you're number one with us. WSMI radio's been around since the 50s, I believe. And the old Jack Kane and Ed Johnson era, which I remind you of all the time.
That's right.
Well-deserved article in the journal on you. It was an outstanding article.
Dave
and
Kane
there's
did a nice job.
He did. And there's no doubt that, without you, this station might have gone a different direction, so I always appreciate you bringing us on and talking to you.
Coach Larry Edwards at Lincolnwood used to say, it's always better to be lucky than good.
Always better to be lucky than good.
And they were both at Raymond.
So, Hey, thanks for coming. And thank now you, we're going to kind of switch competition. We're going to sling a different kind of bull. We're going to turn things over to our farm broadcaster, Katie Wilson, who had a chance to talk with Randy Littrell from Shop Creek Cattle Company about the Battle of the Bulls event, which is coming up on Saturday, September 10th.
Randy, an event coming up in September. I think this has happened for several years now, but bull riding at Midway Trailer Sales.
Yes, Katie, September 10th, we are bringing the bull riding back to Midway Trailer Sales, and we're excited, trying to get everything put together for that.
Well, looking forward to that event, and let's talk about it. Is this open to anyone, or is it sanctioned? Kind of who's going to be involved?
It is sanctioned with the NFPB, which is the National Federation of Professional Bull Riders. The main office is in Mansfield, Missouri, but they're a regional bull riding organization. We like to call it like a feeder team for like the PBRs and the CBRs, the larger bull ridings. And it covers pretty much the Midwest, Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, down through Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee, and then Indiana to Kansas, Nebraska. But it's a regional organization, and it's a really good organization. We have a lot of talented bull riders, and we have a big finals every year at the end of the year, which is in DuCoin, Illinois. And so we're also working on that at this time.
So these bull riders, they're going to be coming from several states.
Yes. And, you know, with this being, you know, Litchfield, Illinois, I mean, most of them will be, within a radius of Litchfield. You know, we'll have some Missouri, maybe some Iowa or Kentucky, you know, maybe Arkansas. And you just never know until they all do get entered and you see, you know, who's coming for sure.
Are there a lot of bull riders that live in Illinois that are a part of this, the National Federation of Public Bull Riders? National Federation of Professional Bull Riding. Are there a lot in the state?
There's several. No one real close, but there is several that do enter the events. And you can enter them not being a member. And so, you know, there'll be a few guys somewhat local that may enter this event. But, you know, because we will take non-members. But right now there's a little bit of a shortage of bull riders, and with it being summertime, everybody's scattered out because there are so many bull ridings and rodeos going on with, you know, the county fairs and big rodeos like Sykeston and Fort Madison and so forth. It really gets the bull riders spread pretty thin. So when they do enter, it's interesting to see who does end up entering and where they're from.
And let's talk about that. If someone hears this and they want to enter into the bull riding event, do they call you? Who should they talk to?
That is done through the NFPB office, and they have a website, which is nfpbullriders.com. And then all the entry information is on their website.
And of course, this is something that the public is invited to attend. So this probably would be a good opportunity to bring the family out to watch.
Yeah, and we went with 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. We decided to do it in the afternoon. One big reason is lighting. It's hard to get, enough lighting for a night event. And then also with it being of an afternoon, maybe makes it a little easier for the family to bring the kids out and get to enjoy the bull riding without having the kids out late at night and so forth. With it being a family event, we'll have a rodeo clown, Shane Jorgensen from Wisconsin, has some really good acts that he'll be doing, and then he'll entertain the crowd in between wise. You know, clean family show. My announcer, Adam Gibbs from Alabama, is outstanding, and he will probably, announce from horseback to where he can interact with the crowd a lot more and so forth. And one thing I like about events like this at Midway with the kids, with it being a small venue, a little more interaction. They get to see the cowboys up close and personal, and, they can get autographs or whatever. The guys are always really good about that. So, that's our whole goal. We want something you can bring the whole family to.
Something fun and local, not something that you see. Normally you have to drive to St. Louis, for example.
Right, right. You know, and then you're kind of limited to being in the grandstands or, you know, in a Coliseum situation where you're not up close and personal. The other exciting thing about it, you know, there's a lot of people in the area that have rodeoed or are rodeo fans, and I just really want to try to bring an event like this to the area.
Well, sounds like it's going to be a fun time and hope that families can attend. As far as tickets go, do they need to purchase those beforehand? Can you purchase them at the gate? Or
We will have probably a couple ticket giveaways.
Okay.
And but the tickets will be $10 at the gate. Children 5 and under are free. And we're going to have it set up. We're going to have some bleachers there. But also feel free to bring your lawn chairs. My plan is to leave the sides of the arena open where people can stand, sit, or whatever, and we'll have the bleachers set up inside the arena where you're facing the bucking chutes head-on, try to give a better view of everything.
And this is happening at Midway, which is right along I-55.
Yep, exit 60 off I-55 at Midway Trailer Sales.
All right. Well, it sounds like a fun event. I want to talk a little more about your business, Shop Creek Cattle Company. You travel all over the United States and take your bulls, so kind of explain what you do at these rodeos and these different bull riding events.
What I do is I lease bulls to other bull riding and rodeo companies for their events. They actually pay me to bring the bulls. I usually keep about 25 head of bucking bulls at the house, and then, you know, and then people hire me. And I work with, you know, kind of the same people throughout the year. I'm gone almost every weekend. We farm also. Sometimes that gets to be a little bit of a struggle. But I try to schedule things around farming season. But I get called, you know, somebody may want 6 bulls or 8 bulls. Somebody may want 20 bulls. And then, you know, then I take the bulls to the events and we buck them at the events. And then I go to the next one or go home or, you know, whatever I have scheduled.
Do you have any sort of any part of your business that deals with genetics? Do you sell your bulls? Do you sell for people to breed with them? Or
I do. You know, the whole bucking bull business, you know, everybody wants to know what breed they are. They are so far removed from a breed because they've been crossbred so much. You know, it's hard to say. You know, a lot of them may say, well, that one looks like a Holstein or that one looks like a Hereford or whatever. Well, that's just how they look, you know, because they are mutts in that respect because they're so crossbred. But it's also, they DNA test them so they can, you know, so we can trace these bulls. I have a lot of bulls that are registered and bred, you know, I mean, they're bred out of what we see on TV, the PBR bulls and so forth. But, I do breed them. I do have cows that I breed to, and then I do sell animals, whether it's heifers, cows, bulls, whatever. That's kind of what I do, you know, at the farm. I have beef cattle also, but the bull business is what, you know, just the buying, the selling, or raising them and selling them is part of how I make a living.
And talking about the bull business, that's something I think you mentioned before we started, is that that's actually grown and is pretty popular throughout the country, and a lot of money in this business.
It is. It's gotten to be a real big thing. It got really, really hot, you know, 10 years ago. You know, everyone thought they were going to get rich doing it. And it's like any other business. You have to work at it. You know, you've got to provide a quality product and have something. A lot of the people that got in it to get rich didn't get rich and got back out. But I've been doing it, gosh, you know, really since I was in high school. I've been playing with the bucking bulls back when I rode bulls. But I've stayed with it. I have a lot of connections. When I need to buy bulls or if I need to sell bulls, you know, I can get on the phone and get my marketing done. And that's just part of the business.
Maybe you could give us an example. I know, of course, it's going to depend on the quality or the breed of the bull, but maybe just a price range from low end to high end. How much money is in this?
Well, the bottom end is the good thing about breeding bucking bulls is you can eat your mistakes. So they can always go to the sale barn and end up in someone's freezer. So the bottom end is basically held up by the beef market. Beyond that, on the top end, $50,000 to $100,000 for an animal, and that's the extreme top end. I mean, a lot of them are probably sold in that $5,000 to $25,000 range. So there's opportunities there, and you know, and we're always working to build better bulls.
Sure. All right. I want to touch on bull riding is not only entertaining to watch, but there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes, not only raising those animals, but for the bull riders, they got to have some stamina going into this. So really, I think it's just as difficult and they have to practice as much as any other sports.
And they do. You know, when we talk about breeding bulls and raising better bulls and so forth, we kind of joke that we need to start some kind of program to raise better bull riders, because as the bulls get better, it does physically get harder on the cowboys. These guys are definitely athletes. They work out. They work with sports trainers. We have sports medicine teams at a lot of the events. They're taking care of the cowboys, trying to keep them healthy, because the majority of the rodeos and bull ridings take place through the summer. And we're at that point in the year now, even at the 1st of August, a lot of these guys are getting pretty beat up and sore and have injuries and so forth. And they're not paid a salary. You know, they have to stay on the road and keep going. So they have to really take care of themselves. And it is always interesting to see as the summer goes on. You know, last weekend I went to two different bull ridings, you know, and the guys I know that are there, you know, this one's elbows hurting and this one's hand is hurting and this one has a pulled groin. And a close friend of mine broke his arm last Saturday night, the bull riding, you know, and so he's maybe out. I haven't heard what the whole diagnosis was, but these guys work hard to stay in shape. You know, they do strength training, endurance training, stretching, and it's me having been there myself, it's hard. It's hard to keep yourself healthy. When everything works great, it's great. They write you big checks, you know, and you're the hero. But when your body starts getting beat up, it makes it tough.
What's the typical age range for a bull rider?
You know, once you get past, you know, we've got a lot of kids in junior rodeo, high school rodeo, things like that. But most guys are done by 30. Now, there's a few guys, you know, in that 30 to 35 range that are still riding very successful. But you just get to that point that your body can't react fast enough like it used to. I mean, we don't always look at the difference between a 20-year-old and a 30-year-old, but physically as an athlete, you know, your body changes a lot in those years. And it takes a pretty outstanding athlete to make it past 30 riding bulls.
Well, all great things that we've talked about today, and definitely a lot that goes into the industry, it sounds like. Randy, if you would, remind us again the date and time and location for the bull riding event.
The bull riding is at Midway Trailer Sales, Litchfield address, but it's at the Carlinville exit, exit 60 off of Interstate 55. It's Saturday, September the 10th at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. Shop Creek Cattle Company does have a Facebook page. NFPBullriders.com is the website, which gives the entry information. We're going to try to keep the Shop Creek Facebook page updated with our sponsors and what's going on.
And we thank Katie Wilson for that interview with Randy Littrell.